हरि ओम तत्सत, हरि ओम तत्सत, जय गुरु, जय गुरु। यस्टरडे आई स्पोक अबाउट व्हाई डिवोटीज आर नॉट एबल टू गेट फाइन ट्यून टू द मैसेज एंड द रिफाइनमेंट विच द विजडम पाथ ब्रिंग्स अबाउट। टुडे रामस्वामी टेल्स मी दैट फॉर दोज हु फॉलो द विजडम पाथ जनरली इट इज डिफिकल्ट और रेयर, and then again there is a measure of dryness or absoluteness about it. On the other hand, if the devotional emotion and sublimity are added to it, then it becomes much sweeter and easier. We have the legend that Vyasadeva wrote Mahabharata, and even after having written 125,000 Sanskrit verses, he was still feeling a little empty and dry. He was not able to feel sublime, buoyant, full and ecstatic. At the instance of Narada, he then started writing Srimad Bhagavatam, where God and devotion rang supreme. Then he became very warm, very buoyant, ecstatically full. So what is this rare or additional contribution from devotion? Why is it that people who follow the wisdom path do not lend themselves to accept and incorporate the devotional undercurrents, making their pursuit as well as perfection facile and faster? This is something very important. There was a clear difference between people given to the so-called wisdom path and the people who are also lending themselves to the devotional thoughts. I did not have any problem in life in incorporating devotion or anything like that. I have grown in a village environment encircled by tradition, particularly devotional tradition. And in my village and around, there were many interesting devotional stories and anecdotes. All of them had definitely a great influence in me then, and even now they have. So what is the devotional undercurrent if you ask me? Srimad Bhagavata itself puts it in this manner. Naishkarmyam apyachyuta bhava varjitam nashobhate jnanamalam niranjanam. As a result of pursuing the jnana path, the wisdom path, if you are able to reach naishkarmya siddhi, what is that naishkarmya siddhi? Normally all actions follow desire, desire, desire. All actions follow desire. There is no action which is not desire oriented. Now this desiring and desire oriented actions, when you have no desire at all, actions lose their relevance, interest and application for you. So you reach a state where you feel, I am not a doer, I don't want anything, I don't have to accomplish anything by any action. Maybe I eat food and breathe air and drink water to answer the calls of nature on the one hand, compulsions of nature, and also to nourish the body. Beyond that, I have no interest. I don't feel I have to institute anything. I don't feel I have to gain anything. I don't think I have to give anything to others. So nothing to receive, nothing to give, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. This is a state of naishkarmya, like nishkinchanatva. Even if you have attained naishkarmya, Srimad Bhagavata says, naishkarmyam apyachyuta bhava varjitam, achyuta bhava varjitam. If it is devoid of the thought and undercurrents of achyuta, the infallible, God is considered infallible, inexhaustible, interminable. So there is an interminable and inexhaustible truth, a presence in the world as the substratum of all the perishable things. It is there in our body as what is denoted by the term I. It is there as the substratum of all individual units as well as the collective universe, like the rails underneath the moving train, the disc in a clock for the moving hands. Achyuta bhava varjitam. If you are devoid of any thoughts and feelings and emotions for the infallible God, narochate jnanamalam niranjanam. This stainless knowledge, even if you gain, it will not be delicious, delicious, delicious. I always used to point out that you imagine a society which believes in God. On the other hand, there is a society which doesn't believe in God. The functional difference, as I understand, between the two is that the devotional society will be able to sustain any kind of a misfortune, calamity, shock, denial or humiliation. The non-devotional society will find it very, very hard, because when the world encircles them with a lot of negative factors, they don't have anything to fall back upon. Jawaharlal Nehru was openly not a religious person, but his sister has written a biography or autobiography of the family. There she used to say, "My bhai, my brother," whenever he was in difficulty and confronted, he used to fall back upon tradition and gain strength. See, where from will you get strength when you are encircled by, stared by a number of difficulties, very life-threatening situations? What will you do? Our jawans, the army people, when they march forward to fight, they always rely upon God. The temple, the church, the mosque, the gurudwara, all of them move forward along with the army, and everything is very well done. The soldiers are given absolute freedom to do their worship. So they worship. After all, they are going to fire and meet fire. I think in the military front also, it is this devotion that enables them to march forward. Otherwise, they will not get up from the bunkers. So devotion has got its own softening element. Softening. It makes you mobile. It makes you warm. It makes you buoyant. It makes you double, treble, and make your personality infinite. We have the traditional story. Hanuman was a devotee of Rama. He always felt, "I should do what my Lord wants me to do. My role is to serve him." And chanting Rama, 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 he jumped over to Lanka. And his master Rama, in order to reach there, he had to build a causeway from India to Lanka. Rama was not a devotee of Hanuman or a devotee of anybody. He knew the soul, and self-realization was his refuge. In that self-realization, he could not find a magic or a miracle which his devotee Hanuman found. So devotion has got a great moving force. It has got a great sustaining element in it. When difficulties come, you cannot close your eyes and then say, "Oh." When difficulties come, they are staring at you. You have to face them, surmount them, walk across and go forward. In that, we want a vibrant force, a vibrant energy, a vibrant enthusiasm, a vibrant resolve. And that resolve should have a promise. Promise. Do whatever you want. I am there to support you. Understand that it is imperishable. By dying on the battlefront, you are not going to become extinct. Go ahead. I am there to support you. This kind of an assurance is there even in the Jnana Shastra Bhagavad Gita. Not one assurance, a few assurances and hopes are there in Bhagavad Gita. So that devotion is something very nice. What is devotion after all? It is on the one hand love, fondness. On the other hand, it is reliance. Reliance. I think these two words can complete the very explanation of devotion. You must have fondness. Fondness by its very nature makes you warm. And there is an elixir which arises from fondness. If a child loves the mother, that love is palpable, feelable and experiential. In the same manner, if you start developing fondness for God, you will find fondness fills your heart, and by its very nature, it is sweet, delightful, appealing and appeasing. What is the harm in having devotion? It will only accelerate your path. It will sublimate your path. It will sweeten your path. Make your path more and more delicious. More and more delicious. I speak a lot of wisdom and wisdom alone. And many of you may perhaps think, Swamiji, all knowledge incarnate. But I can tell you from my own position, I am more devotion incarnate than knowledge incarnate. Every word that I speak arises from my devotional focus and exclusiveness. I have always a complaint to make to God. If God had asked me, would you like to be born in the world? This is the picture of the world. He did not ask me and send me here. This is a mistake he has done. I cannot excuse him for this. If this is the type of world I was informed beforehand, I would have told God, I don't like to go, don't send me. But he did not give an opportunity for me to know about where I was going. No option was given. So it was thrust on me. Therefore, the person who has thrust me into this world must look after me also. Otherwise, he fails in his mission, which is not acceptable. See, my vairagya and devotion make me say so. Similarly, I say, I have given two challenges to God. One is to banish me from his kingdom. Where is the other place where he is not and his kingdom is not? Another challenge is, exit if you can from my heart. Both these challenges, poor God, helplessly has not met. And he will never be able to meet. Tell me what makes me say this. On the one hand, it is the knowledge and realization that God is present everywhere, everywhere, irreplaceably, nobody can push him around. Another is the devotional fondness I have for him. I don't need a form. I don't need a shape. I don't like to address him as either he exclusively or she, but by and large I use the masculine. I talk to him, I feel him, I grumble when necessary, I complain also. We have got a very sweet relationship. And then this is what Bhagavad Gita says. Four types of devotees are there. Artho, Jijnasur, Artharthi, Jnani, Cha, Bharadarshava. The afflicted, the seeking or inquiring, and then the one who wants to attain a particular object in his life. Then the fourth is the knower of truth. This knower of truth, he says, I never get lost to him and he is not lost to me. I am extremely dear to the knower and he is also extremely dear to me. We are hand in gloves with each other. What more do you want? So in jnana, there is no denial of devotion. And in devotion, there is no denial of wisdom. So in a true, warm-hearted, noble, sweet, beautiful heart, as is jnana, so also is devotion. There is no partiality for anything. There is no exclusiveness. It is a beautiful blending of the heart and the intelligence, like poetry and wisdom. Harihi Om Tat Sat. Jai.